The mind of a criminal can be a very dark place. But you're not scared of the dark, are you? Crime Con, the world's number one true crime event, is coming to London, June 2021. Get inside the mind of serial killers and psychopaths. Learn from leading criminologists. Hear from the families and survivors. Meet your favorite true crime podcasters. Immerse yourself in forensic evidence and delve deeper into unsolved crimes. Limited early bird tickets are on sale now. Visit crimecon.co.uk. CrimeCon UK, the ultimate true crime weekend. Partnered by Crime and Investigation.
Hi, and welcome back to the Unseen Podcast, a podcast dedicated to missing people, unresolved cases, and UK true crime. Today we're going to be looking into a case that I have been following for a long time and has been suggested to me numerous times since I started the podcast. Claudia Lawrence was 35 when she suddenly disappeared after finishing a shift at work in March 2009. Her disappearance has been the subject of a large investigation and a huge amount of speculation. Despite this, her case remains just as mysterious as when she disappeared. And sadly, her family still do not know where she is. This episode contains descriptions that some listeners may find distressing, so listener discretion is advised. Claudia Lawrence was born on the 27th of February 1974 in York and grew up in the market town of Moulton in North Yorkshire. It's located around 18 miles away from the city of York. Moulton has been voted as one of the best places to live in the UK and has also been described as the food capital of Yorkshire. It's a very pleasant place to live for the around 13,000 residents there. Claudia grew up in the town with her father Peter, who worked as a solicitor, her mother Joan and her older sister Ali. Claudia has been described as a kind, caring and popular person by her mother, and it was known that she had a good relationship with her sister Ali. As a child, she enjoyed riding horses, and this was an activity that her and her sister would do regularly. They attended the same school and would get the train there together. Popular was one of the words that everyone that knew Claudia used to describe her, when she was a child, but also when she grew up as a teenager and an adult. She was known to get on with everybody, and she had lots of friends. She enjoyed meeting new people and was relaxed in social situations. As she grew up, it became apparent that Claudia had a love of cooking, and she also was very skilled at it. She attended York College Catering Department and did very well there, passing her exams and going on to work in local pubs in Moulton. Claudia eventually got a job at Goodricke College, within the Roger Kirk Centre at the University of York. She enjoyed this job as the hours were much better, and she got on well with her colleagues. As her job was now in York, Claudia moved into the city and bought a cottage at 46 Heworth Road, in an area around 1 mile from the city centre, and just over 2 miles from Claudia's job at the University of York. This was the perfect place for her, and she enjoyed both her professional life and her social life. She made time to meet up with friends, and liked going for drinks at local pubs and bars in the area. In short, she was a normal woman in her 30s, enjoying her life. By 2009, Claudia was 35 years old and had a normal routine of going to work, seeing her family and socialising in her spare time. She had a regular early morning shift at the university that started at around 6 a.m, and she would often be out very early to set off for work and go to bed early, ready for her shift the next day. On the 18th of March 2009, Claudia had travelled to work as usual, ready for her early shift. Her car, a Vauxhall Corsa, was in the garage for repairs, and for a while she'd been walking to the university. Some reports say that she had just been walking that week, although others state that she had been making the journey for several weeks while the car was in the local garage. Goodricke College, where she worked, was just over 2 miles from her home on Heworth Road. It's known that Claudia arrived at work on time and that she finished her shift at around 2:30 p.m. CCTV would later establish this and that she set off on foot in the direction of her home. There was nothing unusual about this as Claudia had been making this journey regularly during at least that week. During her journey, CCTV also spotted her dropping off a letter into a postbox as she walked. Her journey would have taken around 40 minutes. However, around halfway back to her house, a colleague driving past her offered her a lift. Claudia took the lift and she arrived back at her home at around 2:50 p.m. It was assumed that she had gone straight into her house. However, around 15 minutes later, one of Claudia's other friends saw her walking back towards her house. This was around 3:05 p.m. and it was not known where she may have gone after being dropped off at home. It was later established that she had not been seen on the local shop CCTV just around the corner, which implied this is not where she went. It was known, however, that she was back in her house after this, as Claudia's mum Joan later explained that she spoke to her on the phone not long after, and that they spoke about upcoming Mother's Day plans. As the night progressed, Claudia also spoke to several other people through both texts and phone calls. She sent a text to a friend at around 8 p.m. and then again at 8:23 p.m. Around half an hour later, her mum called her and they had a conversation about a TV programme that they were both watching that night. She also stated that Claudia said she was about to go to bed, which was her normal routine. Around an hour after this, it's known that Claudia received another text message, this time from a friend in Cyprus. She didn't reply though, and it was assumed that she had already gone to bed. The next morning, Claudia was due at work on her usual early morning shift. However, she didn't turn up. This was unusual and out of character for Claudia, and her boss rang her from work to check where she was. She didn't answer, and she didn't turn up at all that day. That evening, she'd made plans with one of her friends called Susie, and was going to meet up with her after work. Again, Claudia was a no-show. Susie was concerned about this and tried to contact her to check where she was and why she hadn't turned up. But like her boss, she didn't get any response. Susie was so concerned when she didn't get any reply by the next morning that she decided to ring Claudia's father, Peter, to tell him about what had happened. Peter decided the best thing to do would be to go around to Claudia's house to check on her. He had a spare key and let himself into the home on Friday, the 20th of March. When he entered, he realised that she wasn't there, but the house looked as it usually did. There were plates in the sink which suggested that she had made herself breakfast. Her toothbrush was left out as though she had used it and her bed was made. It looked as though Claudia had just stepped out of the house for work as she usually did. The fact that she had not contacted anyone the previous day, particularly Susie, who she had plans with that night, weighed on Peter's mind. And he knew something wasn't quite right. He later stated, "I was worried to death, quite honestly, and was even more so when I went through and found she wasn't in the house." Peter filed a missing person report for Claudia that day, and the North Yorkshire Police were immediately involved in the investigation. It was quickly evident that Claudia had not contacted anyone since the Wednesday evening, and that this was not the norm for her. From speaking to friends and family members, the police quickly established that the lack of contact was a worry, as Claudia was known to text and ring people frequently. Claudia's father later made a statement explaining that she was a sociable person who would not just not turn up to work without saying anything. It's reported in The Guardian that Peter said, "Claudia is someone who is always on the phone by voice or text, but all of a sudden there has been no contact. We're distraught and we need your help. It's been a living nightmare not knowing what's happening and we are sick with worry. This is no jaunt that she has gone on." It was clear that Claudia's disappearance was out of character and North Yorkshire Police also agreed. They immediately examined her home at Heworth Road with the hope that there may be some evidence to point to where she may be or may have gone. Like Peter, they too struggled, as it appeared that she had simply stepped out of the door and left the house as it usually would be. There were, however, some items missing, which suggested that she could have headed out to work. Her phone was missing, along with a blue and grey Carrymore rucksack that she usually took to work with her chef whites in. Police also found that Claudia's GHD straighteners appeared to be missing, and it was later confirmed that she did occasionally take these to work with her. These appeared to be the only items missing, as she had left her handbag along with her credit cards and passport at home. For police, this seemed to be the first indication that Claudia had perhaps been on her way to work on that Thursday morning. Two bottles of blonde hair dye were also found in her bathroom, along with other hair dye materials and gloves. Police have since stated that there was the possibility that she had been dyeing someone's hair, and they appealed for anyone who knew about this to come forward. There was nothing that appeared to indicate anything had gone wrong in her home. If she had just headed out to work, why had she not arrived? Could something have possibly happened to her on the way there? The first press conference into Claudia's disappearance was held on the following Monday, the 23rd of March, and both Peter and Joan appealed for any information about where Claudia was. The police were quick to produce posters of Claudia that could be distributed to the public in an effort to get her recognised in the local areas. There were issues with these posters, however, from the outset. It soon became apparent that the photograph the police was using was an old one, and it showed Claudia as having blonde hair. Friends and acquaintances of Claudia's, including a security guard at the university where she worked, told police that she didn't actually look this way when she went missing. Claudia's mother later told a documentary by Donal McIntyre that Claudia had brown hair and that she had had auburn highlights put in not long before her disappearance. She also stated that she wasn't sure where the photo had even come from, and that she had certainly not been consulted on its use on the posters. This immediately caused some problems, as it meant that people had not necessarily been looking for Claudia as she looked recently. Around half a dozen people reportedly rang in to police to tell them, and it took a while for them to release a new, more updated photo of Claudia to the public. North Yorkshire Police began to concentrate on Claudia's private life, her journey from work on the 18th of March, and her possible journey back the next day. Detectives were able to confirm the events of the 18th, and established that Claudia had walked part of the way home, posted a letter at Melrose Gate Post Office, and received a lift off her colleague. CCTV showed her leaving the university at around 2:30 p.m. and posting the letter in the postbox around halfway back on her journey. This, however, seemed to be the last official sighting of Claudia in person or on CCTV that the police could find. It was crucial that they try to track down any other sightings or leads that may relate to the investigation. Due to the theory that Claudia may have set out for work on the morning of Thursday the 19th of March, the police began trying to track down her movements early that morning. Very soon after the start of the investigation, detectives did get some tips about possible sightings on Claudia's route to the university. It's reported that a cyclist travelling across Melrose Gate Bridge at around 5:35 a.m. on the 19th spotted a man and woman on the pavement. The cyclist was able to provide a description of the man, explaining that he was around 5 feet 6 inches tall, wearing a dark hoodie and dark combat trousers. He was described as skinny and was smoking a cigarette. The cyclist was able to be quite specific, as the man was standing closest to the road, and he reportedly was smoking using his left hand. While the cyclist couldn't confirm if the woman was Claudia or not, the information was of interest to the police, as it was along Claudia's route to work, and around the time that she would usually be heading in that direction. The cyclist did inform police that the woman appeared to have mousy brown hair and was wearing a blue waist-length jacket with buttons and pockets. Police also received information about another sighting of a man and woman, this time a little later on. A commuter was driving along University Road, around 1 mile from Claudia's workplace, when she saw a man and a woman on the side of the road next to a car. The car door was reportedly open, and the witness stated that it looked as though the man and woman were having an argument. The man was described as wearing a black hoodie with his hood up. Detectives were left with two witness sightings of men with somewhat similar descriptions, and on the same route as Claudia took to work, however could not be sure if these sightings were of the same person. They also did not know if the woman was Claudia, as neither witness could confirm this. Were they the same couple, and if it was Claudia, who was the man, and why did it look as though they were arguing? This was an important line of inquiry for the police, who quickly distributed this description to the media and the public. If Claudia had disappeared during her walk to work, then these sightings were so important to follow up with. I'm so excited to tell you that CrimeCon, the world's number one true crime event, is coming to London in June 2021. Get inside the mind of serial killers and psychopaths, learn from leading criminologists, hear from the families and survivors, meet your favourite true crime podcasters, and immerse yourself in forensic evidence and unsolved crimes. CrimeCon is the ultimate true crime weekend partnered by Crime and Investigation. I will be there on Podcast Row with many more of your other favourite podcasters. It's going to be a great weekend and I can't wait to meet up with all of you and hear from all the different experts and speakers. Limited tickets are on sale now and I would love for you to come along to what will be an amazing weekend. So if you're interested and also want to support the show, quote Unseen for a special 10% discount. I'm also offering access to all of my bonus content for anyone that signs up using my code. Just message me and let me know if you have. Visit crimecon.co.uk for more information and to book your tickets. CCTV was a huge part of the investigation, as there were no solid leads as to where Claudia had gone or what time, so trying to trace her movements was key. When police looked through the CCTV that was placed on the street at the rear of her property, they found something very interesting. Two CCTV videos were eventually released to the public in an effort to identify the man that was seen in the footage. Both videos show Hereworth Place, a street at the back of Claudia's home. One video shows the evening of the 18th of March, when it was known that Claudia was at home. It was 7:15 p.m. and dark by this point, with just the streetlights illuminating the road and houses. A man who looks to be wearing dark clothing rounds the corner from the direction of Claudia's house on the main road. He walks down the road and out of shot of the camera. He disappears for around a minute before reappearing in shot. A man wearing a luminous jacket crosses the road in front of the man, and the man stops as though waiting for the man to pass, before once again setting off and rounding the corner in the same direction as he came from, towards the main road and Claudia's front door. The police, on their official appeal video, pointed out that the man appeared to be carrying a bag over his shoulder. However, this is not entirely clear in the video. It's important to note that Claudia's front door was located on the main road, but the back of her house appeared to back onto a back passageway, and then behind that another residential street with a mix of flats and houses. This street could be accessed via the main road, which is where this man came from. Having looked at Google Maps and images from 2009, it appears that there was an alleyway that led to the back passage at the back of Claudia's house that could be accessed from the road that the man walked down. However, of course, this is not completely certain. The fact that the man was only gone for a minute and appeared to stop when somebody came past was certainly suspicious. To me, when the man stops, it appears that he puts his hand to his pocket. However, the images are not the clearest. It was thought that at 7:15 p.m, Claudia was at home. What was this person doing, and why had he only gone into the street for a minute? The images are eerie, and certainly important, but what was spotted the next morning on CCTV was also particularly interesting. At 5:50 a.m. the next morning, a man was picked up on the same CCTV as the night before, in the same spot. He rounded the corner from the main road from the direction of Claudia's front door. It's a little brighter on this video, and this man could be seen wearing dark clothing. He walked down the street at Hereworth Place and went out of view of the camera. In a strange similarity to the night before, the man returned into view 1 minute and 7 seconds later, walking back up towards the main road. What was this man doing? It is of course possible that these men had good reason to be on that road at that time, but there was a certain similarity in what they did. Why had they walked down the street to then just walk straight back out again? The images are quite chilling, mainly because the men on the two videos also resemble each other, in their clothing, height and distinctive walk, of which the police showed on the video in a screenshot. I'll provide a link to these videos in the show notes, as I think they're so important to look at, particularly side by side. The police, however, have never released a statement to say that these two men could be the same person, but that both videos are of interest to them, due to the proximity to Claudia's home. If Claudia had travelled to work at her normal time that morning, then she would not have been in anyway when the man entered the street. The returning sponsor of today's episode is June's Journey. I'm really excited that June's Journey has decided to work with the podcast again, because I love playing the game and have really got into it during lockdown. It's a free-to-download mobile game set during the 1920s. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game where you have to find clues in the beautifully crafted vintage scenes and try to solve the crime. The game is perfect if you want to relax, but also tests your powers of observation and investigation skills. The 1920s theme is so striking, and the game takes you through many of the colourful and intricate scenes from the era. If you're looking for something fun and lightly challenging, then June's Journey is for you, as you follow the story and try to solve the mystery along the way. June's Journey has more than 3 million active fans around the world and is available on Android, iOS and on desktop through Amazon and Facebook. The game is free to download and is really easy to get into and enjoy. The link to download the game is in the show notes, and I'm sure it will be something that you will love, so give it a go and support our sponsors. Information that later came to light in the investigation indicated that a witness had spotted a man standing outside Claudia's house at around 6:45 to 6:55 on the morning of the 19th of March. The witness, a cyclist, told police that he was white, around 55 to 65 years old, around 6 feet tall with medium-length grey hair which was scruffy and windswept. He was wearing a matte sandy-coloured Mac-style jacket, which was unfastened and came just below the knee. It appeared to be made out of a thick material, or the man had extra clothing on underneath it. Detective Superintendent Di Malin later commented on this sighting during the subsequent reinvestigation of the case. His statement is recorded on the North Yorkshire Police website. This is clearly a critical period of the investigation. We need to identify this man as soon as possible and find out what he was doing outside Claudia's house. This time would have been after she had left for work if she had walked. Therefore, why this person would be so close to her door remains a very important fact we need to establish. The police continued to investigate and appeals were made to the public for any information they may have about Claudia's disappearance. It was announced that Crime Stoppers had also put up a £10,000 reward for any information pertaining to the case, and this appeal was distributed to the public. Further appeals were also made to track down people who may have been in the area, including the driver of a light-coloured hatchback Ford Focus car, who drove down Heworth Road and appeared to break outside Claudia's home at around 5:42 a.m. on the morning of the 19th of March. Despite these appeals in the first few weeks of the investigation, nothing had come in as of yet that could point to her whereabouts. It was announced 5 weeks into the missing person inquiry that police were now looking at Claudia's case as a suspected murder. Detectives didn't appear to have any evidence to suggest that she had been murdered, however the unusual nature of her disappearance and the fact that they had had no sightings of her since was a great concern to police, and they believed that some harm may have come to her. In June 2009, Claudia's case appeared on Crime Watch, and they conducted an extensive reconstruction of her movements on the 18th of March, showed the CCTV footage, and spoke to family members. It was hoped that this would lead to new information. Claudia's case was now a national story, and many people were puzzled by how she could have just vanished. The Crime Watch appearance, however, ended up causing some difficulties between the police and Claudia's family. Detective Superintendent Ray Galloway appeared on the programme to talk about what they knew about Claudia's case, and he confirmed that they, as yet, had no proof of life and that it was being treated as a suspected murder. He told the programme that Claudia's life had areas of complexity and mystery that may not have been known to her family. He explained that he wanted to appeal to anyone that knew about this side of her life, and to anyone that even had any suspicions at all, to come forward to speak to them. He also stated that the evidence suggests that she left early that morning, however they were unsure if she stayed at her own home the night before or not. The statement that Claudia may have had another life unknown to her family was not something that the family recognised, and they believe that these comments may have done more harm to the investigation. They believe that the suggestion that she had a secret private life caused damage to her reputation and would affect how the public saw her. Headlines about Claudia's case would later focus on former boyfriends and speculate about how many lovers she may have had. Rumours of clandestine relationships with married and dangerous men were published, which her family and friends rejected. Claudia was a popular young woman, however those that knew her did not appreciate the negative way in which she was being portrayed. It's reported in Yorkshire Live that Claudia's father stated, "We really wonder whether, certainly recently, she had time to form any relationships other than those we know. She saw her best friend Susie and myself very regularly, and she worked in quite a strenuous job. We wonder about it." It's reported that Detective Superintendent Galloway later said that he didn't mean for his comments to come out in the way that they did. However, it's clear that the suggestion that Claudia had been involved with different men did have an effect on the way in which she was seen in the media. This is of course wrong, and missing people should be given the same amount of importance regardless of any aspect of their lifestyles. Her relationships with other people were of course a line of inquiry for the police, and it was for this reason that the investigation was broadened to include Cyprus. Claudia had some connection to the country, as she knew people who worked there and had been on holidays there. There was also some speculation that she had received job offers in the country while she was there. Police were sent out to interview those people that knew her, however this search did not turn up any new clues. And as was already known, Claudia had left her passport behind and had not travelled abroad as far as police knew. The investigation continued throughout 2009, with no new evidence emerging and no sightings of Claudia. Her family were devastated about her disappearance and appealed multiple times to the public for their help in finding her. Peter, Claudia's father, launched a website which is still in operation today, called findclaudia.co.uk, and by May of 2009 it had already received 10,000 visitors. Throughout that year, police had the job of trying to draw out credible evidence, and a number of hoax calls and information was unfortunately circulated. These included a man who claimed he had found Claudia's body under a bush, and a teenager who said he had received a message from Claudia, saying that she was alive and well. Both of these people were later cautioned by police. This must have been horrific for Claudia's family, as they were eagerly awaiting new information that could give them some closure, and sadly, hoax information is not uncommon in missing person investigations. In February 2010, Claudia's family held a Claudia Lawrence Awareness Day in order to keep her memory alive to those that knew her and the public. Later that year, it's reported that the police began searching various other parts of York, close to the university, and the area of Heslington, around 2 miles from Claudia's house. One of the search areas is reported as being a children's play area. It was believed that they had been acting on new information, however these searches turned up nothing of interest. Over the next few years, the police continued their investigations. However, the inquiry was scaled down and officers were taken off the case. It's reported in the York Press that the number of officers working on the case went from 100 to 16 to 7. Claudia's family campaigned heavily during this time to keep her in the headlines. Peter Lawrence spoke to MPs regarding how missing people's estates are managed, and Joan Lawrence became mayor of Moulton and continued to speak out for her daughter. In 2013, it was announced that the Major Crime Unit in North Yorkshire had been tasked with reviewing Claudia's case, and it was at this point that new crucial information about her disappearance came to light. This new evidence was a huge development. Police had used advanced techniques that were not available in 2009 to re-examine both Claudia's home and her car that had been stored at a local garage while it was having repairs. In the previous forensic search of her house, detectives had uncovered some partial fingerprints. However, during the reinvestigation, additional fingerprints were found that could be of use to the investigation. Detective Superintendent Di Mallin, in charge of the new investigation, explained on the North Yorkshire Police website that DNA had also been recovered from items in the house. Forensic examination of her car had also recovered cigarette butts. This was not seen as unusual at the time, as it was known that Claudia allowed people to smoke inside her car. However, it was reported that following further forensic analysis, scientists had been able to obtain the DNA profile of a male. Detective Superintendent Mallin stated, "We need to know if Claudia had any male friends, colleagues or acquaintances who were known to smoke in her car." From speaking to Claudia's friends, it wasn't unusual for people to smoke in her car or her home. Again, the elimination process is a simple one, so we urge you to come forward. This discovery also posed another question. Could the sighting of the man seen smoking with the woman on the bridge in the early hours of Thursday morning be anything to do with it? This was a question posed by the Major Crime Unit, and once again the police appealed for anyone with information about the left-handed smoker to come forward. The largest piece of information related to Claudia's phone activity. Her phone was missing from her home, and it was assumed that she had taken it with her, along with her rucksack, chef's whites and straighteners. It was known that Claudia's boss had rang her at around 10 a.m. on Thursday the 19th of March, the morning that she had not shown up for work. Analysis of the phone call showed that it connected with Claudia's phone at a cell site near to the university. This information showed that Claudia's phone had not left York. The police were able to establish that it could have been within a 9-mile area from the university to Tockwith Village on the other side of the city. This is quite a large area, however it shows that whatever happened to Claudia's phone, it was still in the city, ruling out it being transported somewhere else in the country, or even abroad on that Thursday morning. This was a crucial piece of information and showed that as of 10 a.m, Claudia was probably still somewhere in the area, or at least her phone was. The phone activity also yielded more information. Claudia's boss had left her a voicemail at 10 a.m, and around 2 hours later at 12:10 p.m, her phone was switched off. Analysis showed that it had been intentionally switched off, and the battery, for instance, had not just died. Experts explained that the phone had sent a record to the network, which was known as an explicit detachment, which shows that it had been powered down manually. This suggests that whoever had Claudia's phone at that point had made the conscious decision to turn it off. The fact that it came just 2 hours after her manager had contacted her is also suspicious, implying that perhaps the phone call had led to someone turning it off to avoid any further contact. This information was huge and caused further alarm for her family and friends. Claudia's mother and father were shocked by the news that her phone had still been on and functioning for hours after she had disappeared, with Joan saying she was not aware that this had been the case. Joan told the Daily Mail, "I had no idea about the manager's message. If someone abducted her and then realised that Claudia had her phone, it makes sense that they would turn it off." She also added that it made her feel physically sick to think that someone had done that. Detective Superintendent Di Mallin provided more information at the time about what else Claudia's phone record showed. His statement is provided on the North Yorkshire Police's website, saying, "Further analysis of Claudia's mobile phone, particularly cell site activity, also shows she was in the Acombe area of York in the weeks leading up to her disappearance. We believe she may have been socialising with person or persons. Again, we would like to know who this was and where it was taking place. Acombe is located around 3.5 miles from Claudia's home and would have been within the 9-mile radius of the cell site. The information, however, simply showed that Claudia had been in that area in the weeks before her disappearance, and police were eager to understand why and who she may have been meeting. During the reinvestigation, it became apparent that police were focusing on areas that were close to Claudia's home, including the alleyway at the rear of her house. In 2015, police carried out searches with trained officers and dogs, and also checked up on residents in the area and any other CCTV that may have been overlooked. Speculation had been rife for a while about whether Claudia could have been harmed by someone that she knew, and this extended to those in the local area. The Nag's Head pub, just a few doors down from Claudia's house, became the subject of rumours. Claudia was a regular in the pub and knew many of the people that went in there. It was reported in the Donal MacIntyre documentary about the case that she also met her dad in there on a number of occasions. The pub was searched thoroughly during the investigation and local residents were questioned extensively about Claudia's disappearance. It's known that during the investigation, police focused on people who frequented the pub and were known to Claudia. It's reported that over the course of the investigation, 9 people had been arrested, 5 of which had connections to the Nag's Head pub. The documentary about Claudia with Donal MacIntyre suggests that there is hostility towards the police in the community due to the way in which they had been approached by investigators. The police themselves, however, have not denied that they assure someone who knew Claudia knows more than they have divulged to detectives. In 2016, Detective Superintendent Mallin told the BBC that the investigation had been compromised by the reluctance of some and refusal of others to cooperate with police inquiries. He said, "I am sure that there are some people who know or who have strong suspicions about what happened to Claudia. For whatever reason, they have either refused to come forward or have been economical with the truth. I am left with the inescapable conclusion that this case could still be solved if only people were honest with us. The fact that they are not is agonising for Claudia's family and they should be ashamed of themselves." Claudia's father, Peter, appears to agree with this and the focus on the Nag's Head pub. He told Vice in 2019, "I can only hope that time breaks people's loyalties. The police think that will happen. My feeling is that the answers to what happened to my daughter lie within the clientele of the pub. People know things that they're not saying." The theory that people close to Claudia, possibly in the local area and in the local pub, is a prevailing theory in this case, and one that police are still working on. In 2017, it was announced that the investigation had been scaled down to the reactive phase, which meant only compelling information would be investigated. Claudia's family were understandably very disappointed and upset about this, however, have continued to support the police in whatever way they can. In 2018, police stated that they were conducting familial DNA analysis of the evidence that they had, as a way to eliminate any suspects. DNA profiling of the partial DNA found in Claudia's car was also re-examined, but unfortunately did not lead anywhere. In 2019, Detective Superintendent Mallin once again appealed to the public to look again at the CCTV of the man walking down the road at the rear of Claudia's house. He stressed that this man was key to the investigation, and finding out who he was of utmost importance. He told the BBC, "I cannot fully accept anything as to the identity of a suggested person, i.e. the man near the alleyway behind Claudia's home, unless we have conclusive evidence to back information up. The call we really want is the one that helps piece together the parts of the jigsaw we already know, regarding her last movements, and people she associated with and places she frequented." Since Claudia's disappearance, her parents have been important advocates for their daughter and have campaigned to keep her case in the public eye. Peter Lawrence has been particularly instrumental in the establishment of Claudia's Law that came into force in July 2019. Claudia's Law helps the families of missing people by enabling them to take over their loved ones' affairs if they have been missing for 90 days or more. Before the law came into force, the families of missing people were not able to take over financial affairs unless they declared that they were dead. The new law meant that families could now have some peace of mind at one of the hardest points in their lives. For the work that Peter has done for families of the missing, he received an OBE in 2018. 2020 marked the 11th anniversary of Claudia's disappearance, and Peter has stated that it's still so important to keep her story in the news. It's reported in the Scarborough News that Peter said just this year, "It's very important for things to keep appearing about Claudia in the media. Usually after something has been in the media about her, the police do have people contacting them. It's been a few months since I last spoke to the police, but perhaps after yesterday's programme, more people may get in touch. After they conducted the last review about 2 or 3 years ago, there's not much else they can do unless someone gets in touch with a lead. I'm not terribly concerned about arrests and charges, but I am concerned about answers into what happened to my daughter." This statement came after Claudia's case was featured on Judge Rinder Crime Stories on ITV, and shows that Claudia's family just do not want people to forget about her, which is the main objective for anyone discussing missing people. North Yorkshire Police made a statement in March this year stating, "It was 11 years ago today that Claudia Lawrence was last seen alive. Our thoughts remain with Claudia's loved ones on this poignant day. North Yorkshire Police will never give up on Claudia until it was known who was responsible for her disappearance and suspected murder. The police have made a point that the investigation is still ongoing, and they are still appealing for any information about Claudia's disappearance." So what happened to Claudia? That's the most baffling and mysterious question, and despite multiple appeals and reinvestigations, we are still none the wiser about the answer. To me, it's evident that whatever happened to Claudia, she was not expecting to be leaving for a long time. She did not take her handbag, purse, credit cards or passport, and she only appeared to have left with her work bag and phone. Whether it was actually Claudia who left with these items is also unclear. The house appears to indicate that she had breakfast and left with her rucksack. However, we don't actually know if this is what happened. Could someone else have picked up her rucksack to make it look that way? I believe that the CCTV images are crucial to the investigation, and having looked at them many times, I can see why the police think that they are key to the case. The images show someone coming down the road, and particularly the evening images appear to show a man stopping as though trying to stay at a distance from other people. Could this be because he had something to do with Claudia and her disappearance? The police theory that someone known to her may have had something to do with it also seems to fit with this. Was it someone from her private life or from the area that knew Claudia's routine? Claudia's disappearance has gained a lot of publicity over the years. However, I agree with Peter that this case can be solved by someone coming forward with information, and without continuing pressure, this may never happen. I'm very hopeful that Claudia's case can be solved, and I hope that this can happen in the near future for her family. If you know anything about Claudia's disappearance in 2009, you can contact Crime Stoppers quoting Claudia Lawrence, North Yorkshire Police at 0800 555 111, or you can contact the charity Missing People at www.missingpeople.org.uk. I would recommend visiting the website run by Claudia's father, which has lots of links to information and media about Claudia. The link is www.findclaudia.co.uk. Let's get Claudia's case solved. Thank you for listening to today's episode, and thanks for sticking with me during the break. I've got some really fascinating cases to cover this series, so I hope you continue to listen. Thank you as always to all of our patrons for your amazing support of the podcast. I want to thank Robert, Kirsty, and Alison for becoming our newest patrons. If you would like to have a look at what we offer on there, including bonus episodes, ad-free early access, and stickers and shoutouts, take a look at the link in the show notes. Thank you to everyone who continues to give us a review wherever you listen. It's always really helpful. Please do connect with me on social media on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or you can send me case suggestions or just general comments and questions to my email at theunseenpod@gmail.com. Just a reminder, episodes are now fortnightly. So I'll see you again in 2 weeks. As always, I'm Caprice, and this has been Unseen. Thank you.